The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Next Best Thing with Linda C. Thompson. This show will intrigue and inspire you and keep you on the pulse of what's going on in healthcare, politics, the arts, and more. Now, here's your host, Linda C. Thompson.
Welcome to The Next Best Thing. I'm your host, Linda C. Thompson. The Next Best Thing covers the entire spectrum of experience from lollipops to loving and healthcare to holiness, technology to twirling, whatever issues are important to you, we find those who know. And today we have yet another amazing guest who has had a 30-year career as a leading business executive, consultant, professor, author, and now, just keep the spice of life going, is running for senator from North Carolina on the Libertarian ticket. So welcome, Dr. Mike Beitler. Mike, how are you?
Thanks, Linda. I'm doing fine, thanks.
We really appreciate carving some time out of this precious holiday period to spend with us here at The Next Best Thing.
Oh, my pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, in looking at all of the wonderful, amazing things that you've done, and I don't know how we live without Google before, but I do know that we all come from somewhere. And so before the leading business executive and consultant and the 30-year amazing career, tell us a little bit about Mike and where he came from and how he got to there.
Well, it's interesting, Linda, because as we should probably tell your listeners, you and I chatted before the show, and we have some similar interests in organizational change and leadership development. So I think that was really interesting, and we had to talk about that a bit. But I grew up in a blue-collar family in Baltimore, and my parents were kind of shocked when I decided to go on to college. But when I decided to go to college, I looked at, do I want to go into finance or do I want to go into psychology? I ended up going into finance because, as you can imagine, my blue-collar dad looked at me and said, well, psychology, you're going to be working with crazy people all day, so you don't want to do that. So I had that fork in the road early in life. And then I followed finance, and as you were indicating earlier, I spent many years as a CPA, and then I went into banking. I was a chief financial officer in banking, saw a lot of the financial crisis in the making. And I got to a crossroad where I said, do I want to continue in finance, or do I want to go back and take a look at that other fork, take a look at psychology? So I went back to grad school and got my master's and doctorate. And since that time, I've been teaching in a business school. But I'm teaching really more of the organizational psychology kind of classes than those accounting, finance type things I had started with earlier in my career.
Those organizational psychology, organizational development, as we call them, they are really in many ways, the value systems, the warp and woof, what holds us together within the organizations of our culture.
I think that's absolutely true. And even though I grew up or came up through the hard side, quote unquote, of the business world, finance and accounting, I really found, Linda, and I'm sure you found this in your consulting work, that unless people have those soft skills, which I think are the hard skills to acquire, they're really not going to be successful. Like, they really have to have the people skills.
It is amazing. I worked for a CEO who said, something I find very profound to this day. And he said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
I think that's true. Then that's really the only way you can lead, I believe.
And that leads directly to leadership and communication.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, we share a similar background in the sense I, too, grew up on the wrong side of the tracks in Beaumont, Texas. Made the commencement address on a Wednesday night from Beaumont High School and left that Friday. So, you know, it was a bigger world, and I was going to go find it, as did you.
And it is, in fact, a big world, isn't it?
Yeah, and the title of this show is The Next Best Thing, because in some ways that's almost a life philosophy for me. Life is just such an adventure, and more stuff to get into and do and explore and be than time to live it. So
that's true, Linda. And as you mentioned, now I'm taking a run for the U.S. Senate. And believe me, 5 years ago, if you had told me I'd be doing that, I would have just laughed and walked away. I would never have dreamt of it.
Well, I do want to move to that. Since you brought it up, let's do that. I want to double back at some point and talk a little bit more about your publications, and especially that wonderful book, Strategic Organizational Change. So, but before we do that, since you brought up that you're going to take this run at the U.S. Senate, I have tell us sort of the genesis of that, and then why the Libertarian Party? Why did you choose that? Libertarian as opposed to libertine? Let's make that a clear distinction.
That's a distinction, right? I guess what I could do there, Linda, I could tell your listeners, and I would bet many of them would relate to this. I actually grew up in a household where my dad was a raging Republican, and my mom was an equally raging Democrat. And I could agree with either one of them. you can imagine.
This is household. Like domestic peace that defined or something.
Yeah, I can tell you many stories about that. But, you know, growing up in that, I just thought, well, they're both crazy. Neither one of them makes any sense. So,
funny how we think that of our parents sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to that. But I can remember, you know, getting into the business world and so forth and meeting these, you know, just diehard Republicans and staunch Democrats and thinking, I don't want anything to do with any of it. But then after many years in banking, And actually watching the financial crisis come together. I mean, we were one of those banks that was cranking out the mortgage loans and selling them to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And and I would step back at times, Linda, and just say, this is a disaster in the making. This can't possibly make any sense. But maybe I'm crazy because nobody else seems to see it as a problem. And then, of course, years later, it does, in fact, become a disaster. Mm. And then I realized, you know, there really were, in fact, people out there called libertarians who, for years, were saying, you know, the government just can't operate like this. So it took me a long time to get to that point. But when I finally realized the libertarians were conservative on fiscal issues and liberal on social issues, that I finally found a good fit for me.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the campaign promises and the platform, the libertarian platform, I think that's a really pithy way to sum it up. Now I want to delve into that a bit more. I'm really tempted to go chronologically here because there's so much in your background in the banking world and watching this the sort of warning signs of what certainly became a disastrous recession for many, and still Main Street is still hurting, let's face it. But since we're talking politics, let's go forward with that, and we'll come back and circle around. And the libertarian platform, as you said, socially liberal, fiscally conservative, et cetera. I've looked over some of your campaign promises, and I'd love for you to sum those up, and then by the time we sum those up, we'll probably have to take a big break in the middle of that, and then when we come back, I want to know, okay, so as a sitting senator, assume you're, you know, beautifully elected, you probably wouldn't have the executive authority to do all the abolishing that you would like to do. And so to talk about how you'd go about it. So let's talk about, let's get started on some of what is your platform and your campaign promises.
Yeah, I guess one thing I should say for your listeners, I know a number of speeches I've done recently, Linda, people have basically asked, well, we just spend a few minutes talking about what a libertarian is. And when I tell them that I'm a fiscal conservative, and then on social issues, I believe you have the right to do anything you want to do as long as you do not infringe on the rights of others. I remember giving that little speech at one place here just recently, and some guy in the front row said, "That sounds very American to me." And I laughed because I thought,
well, we do have that ethos of freedom that is the basis of this country.
Yeah, that's not like a founding father kind of a philosophy, which I think it is. So, yeah, you tell me which way you want to go. We can talk about the fiscal issues or the social, but I think I guess, and you can tell from my website, I'm focusing more on the fiscal now because it's, we have such a fiscal crisis, such a fiscal mess.
Yeah. Well, let's see. One of the things that I was looking at your campaign promises, and you're going to abolish the Federal Reserve and the Department of Education, all laws that restrict individual rights, corporate welfare. You know, individuals who are in need should turn to charitable organizations, not government. Deficit spending, funding for U.S. government foreign intervention. And yet the question that comes to my mind is, how, as a sitting senator, not a chief executive, what would be your steps? How would you do that?
Well, I think what you almost have to do is you have to be willing to fight a battle like Ron Paul is doing, the congressman from Texas, where he's saying, you know, we got to get people on board to at least start auditing some of these things. And
the transparency issue and the oversights. Is that where you're going?
It seems to me we were promised more transparency, but I think we've got less than ever. So I think Democrats and Republicans alike now are saying, you know, we really do need this. So I think starting with an audit of the Fed would be a great place to start.
Yeah, hold that thought. We're going to stop for a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to hear more of Dr. Mike Beitler, his senatorial bid, and auditing the Fed on the Next Best Thing. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com. TriEye is passionate about our credibility and the reputation of our clients. We build long-term value-added relationships, optimize social capital and bottom-line results. TriEye features the three I's. Insight. Identifying client vision, strategy, and goals. Designing perfect programs and invigorating individuals, teams, organizations. Inspiration. Enlivening vision, strategy, and goals in the heart, mind, spirit of all in the organization. Implementation. Pragmatic results, outcomes, and plans for follow-through. For follow-up and an assessment of our success, visit TRIIST.com today. Acclaimed author, playwright, poet, singer, actor, and beauty, Linda C. Thompson is the double, triple threat. You can anticipate a stunning performance in her next three books already in the works. Her personal next best thing? She's in training to be a horse whisperer. For more information about Linda C. Thompson and to view her blogs, check out her podcasts and connect with her community, visit www.lindasworlds.com. Again, that's lindasworlds.com. Listen for MD Radio on Voice America.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your hosts Sean Ray and Flex Wheeler will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow.
Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific on Voice America.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time, the number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Enjoying The Next Best Thing with host Linda C. Thompson, a show that sorts out this confusing, complex world by keeping you one step ahead of the game. Let's continue our discussion. Here's Linda C. Thompson.
Welcome back to The Next Best Thing. I'm your show host, Linda C. Thompson, and today we're visiting with Dr. Mike Beitler, who is a consultant, leading business executive, 30 years now running for Senate from North Carolina, the Senate from North Carolina on the Libertarian ticket. And welcome back, Mike.
Well, thanks again.
Right before break, we said, okay, hold that thought. We're going to talk about auditing the Fed and how that would work. I mean, abolishing, well, yes, but then we said, okay, auditing. So let's talk about what you would, how you would go about doing that. Well, assuming, of course, you are now a sitting senator and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I like that assumption. Okay. Yes, starting with that assumption, I really do think you'd have to start with an audit. But to be perfectly honest, and I'm sure Ron Paul knows this when he introduced his bill to audit the Fed, it's going to be a real uphill battle because they don't want us to see what goes on behind those doors. They don't want to see where the $2 trillion went that was printed. They don't want to be accountable to the public. So it's going to be a battle. But I think if we can get an audit of the Fed, people like me will suddenly be mainstream saying, you know, we need to abolish this. This is just an absolutely horrible idea.
Now, there's a lot of language that's been floating around in the national dialogue from the Fed and others about why that kind of behind closed doors is necessary in terms of, you know, the books and records are open, but there's certain things that are behind closed doors because. So give us your take on the because and what you think of the because.
Yeah, you and I talked about during the break, part of my own personality, I guess, is when somebody says you can't see behind this door, now I want to see behind the door more than ever. And I think they've stirred that up in the American people. If everything is fine behind that door, why can't we know what's going on? So in other words,
of course, devil's advocate here. Just a moment. The because becomes the independence of the Fed to not become politicized, et cetera, which is like, ooh, okay. It puts me in mind of the Greenspan days when we watched how he carried his briefcase before the Fed meeting.
Right. Well, and I think when we even talk in terms of we don't want to politicize the Fed, but we know the Fed chairman and the board of governors is appointed by the president, and so they're in bed with the federal government. There's no. Mm-hmm. It really isn't the idea that they're independent and they could go against, you know, what the federal government wants is really kind of insulting to the American people that we would believe that.
How have we believed it or not questioned it until now, do you think, as a people?
You know, I think that's a great question because I think it's become an issue now because people are seriously thinking in terms of, well, wait a minute, to get us out of this financial crisis, they printed $2 trillion. What does that do to the dollars in my pocket? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's taken away our wealth that we work to accumulate. I think it hits home because it's, you know, they can, people, Americans can now understand what this means to them.
I think it does. I mean, you know, the baby boomers have worked hard. They're approaching their, what they thought, golden years. They're the largest generation in history. And they're looking around and going, what happened to it? Where is it?
I think
what happened to all
right.
that money I saved and earned?
You're right.
And I mean, it's pretty simple when you get down to it. And we have, there is a sort of a smoke and mirrors of complexity around it that mask the simplicity of it.
That is
my own
really well said. Because if you think about this, Linda, like you're saying, in just the simplest terms, the federal government obviously has an outrageous amount of debt, $12 trillion, plus there's another $50 to $75 trillion in unfunded liabilities. You know, speaking as a CPA here for a minute, that's an unbelievable amount of debt. Well, if they double the money supply, I'm not suggesting that they do this, but if they double the money supply, that would in effect reduce their debt burden dramatically. But you can see what it would do to us American citizens. It would cut our wealth in half.
Absolutely. There's twice as much money, and each dollar is worth half as much.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just real simple arithmetic.
Right, right.
So we have a lot on this fiscal issue, and the wealth, how people that have worked hard all their lives have stashed, have saved, have invested, have, you know, done all the good stuff of paying taxes and, you know, those sorts of things. And now, okay, where is it? I need it now.
Well,
so what would be some of the, I mean, and I don't want, because there are many things in your campaign promises, and I want to really have this opportunity to look at the, not only your campaign, but from your sort of out-of-the-box perspective, which is what we need, a sort of a state of American politics. I won't say State of the Union, but, you know, what is the state of American politics in your view? So there's so much more to talk about than I know we're going to have time to talk about. But what would be the sort of pithy summary, if we could, from your perspective around the fiscal policies, what would be concrete next steps that you would take as a sitting senator?
Well, I think the concrete steps lead from the concerns that the American people have now. I know when I'm out campaigning, I find that I have a lot of support from Democrats and Republicans because they're saying that this two-party system doesn't offer an alternative at all. You know, if you vote for big government Democrats or big government Republicans, either way, it's going to put you and your family into more and more debt. So I think they really are looking for another alternative. So while I think you're absolutely right, Linda, we need to have a list of, you know, a to-do list when we get to Washington, I think more importantly than that, we need to have some kind of a philosophy that would drive these decisions and drive that agenda.
As if, assuming, of course, your favorite assumption that you are the sitting senator, you're going to have to work with other senators, and most of them will not be libertarians.
Oh, absolutely.
So the philosophy and it is going to drive, I think, some of those next steps because, you know, as we talked about with the organizational development issues, it comes down to communication, the soft skills that are really the hard skills.
Well, and you're right. That's a good analogy when we're doing our organizational change work. You know, you have to build those coalitions within the organization. You can't have one person driving the change, as you well know, no matter how charismatic they are or if they're the CEO or not, they still have to build the coalition. So you're right. And I think the way you do that, Linda, is all these people we're talking about are elected officials. And if there are enough people back home saying, you know, if you don't follow these constitutional principles that the country was founded on, we're not going to reelect you. I think that would be the attention getter.
Do you think there's a more of a, I mean, are in your view and in your campaign trail here, are the American people that you come in contact with more engaged in the political process now, or are they, you know, more checked out and given up?
You know, if you had asked me that a year or two ago, Linda, I probably would have said they were less engaged. But now I see them as more engaged because they're beginning to understand $12 trillion or more in debt. If you translate that into per person, we're talking about $39,000 per person in debt. And that's per person. That's not per family.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
If you're
even
a
children.
Family of four, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot
and
of money.
Right, and people are realizing now that we're mortgaging our future,
that's
and the next generation is going to have an unbelievable burden to put up with.
Yeah, the money thing is it's simple, and yet the solution, I think, is going to be more complicated because everybody's right in their own mind.
Right.
And they all have their perspective, and they're all right in their own minds. So I think the pressure of the, you know, finally, the pressure of the constituencies and their point of view is going to carry the day.
That's right. Well, and one thing I've done, too, Linda, with when I'm speaking to, like, university students, you know, I'll typically start off by saying, on behalf of the baby boomers, I want to apologize for the shameless legacy of debt that we're leaving to your generation. Because I'm really quite serious about this. Maybe you and I can, you know, still, you know, retire and collect Social Security and sit on the beach somewhere. But the younger generation's going to have to pay for all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be upset about it.
Mm-hmm. And the baby boomers, I think, you know, assuming that we actually can do that, which is an issue, are the very generation that in many ways it is the apology, and yet it is also we bought into a system that failed us.
That's true.
We invested in a system that let us down.
That's true.
So there's apologies enough to go around generationally and up and down the chain, no doubt about it. We could talk endlessly about the fiscal situation and need to because it is very serious. Yeah,
it's a huge problem.
We're going to have to pause for just a moment and talk and take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the corporate welfare that you would have abolished because, you know, that has really taken off in a lot of ways. And how would we go about reining that back in? So let's pause for just a moment, and then we'll be back with Dr. Mike Beitler and the next best thing and talking about let's rein in the welfare system, corporate and individual in this country. We'll be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
TriEye is passionate about our credibility and the reputation of our clients. We build long-term value-added relationships, optimize social capital and bottom-line results. TriEye features the three I's. Insight. Identifying client vision, strategy, and goals. Designing perfect programs and invigorating individuals, teams, organizations.
Inspiration.
Enlivening vision, strategy, and goals in the heart, mind, spirit of all in the organization.
Implementation.
Pragmatic results, outcomes, and plans for follow-through. For follow-up and an assessment of our success, visit TRIIST.com today.
Acclaimed author, playwright, poet, singer, actor, and beauty, Linda C. Thompson is the double, triple threat. You can anticipate a stunning performance in her next three books already in the works.
Her personal next best thing?
She's in training to be a horse whisperer. For more information about Linda C. Thompson and to view her blogs, check out her podcasts, and connect with her community, visit www.lindasworlds.com. Again, that's lindasworlds.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed? Do you lack energy and enthusiasm?
Do you really want to change your thoughts and feelings? Can you really stay sane when your life isn't?
Of course you can. Just by listening to Stay Sane Now each week with Claudine Struck and co-host Wesley Stoller, you'll have fun and learn how to make each new day the best day of your life. Every show is designed to energize and get you started off on the next week. Stay Sane Now is broadcast live Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific on Seventh Wave Network.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Enjoying The Next Best Thing with host Linda C. Thompson, a show that sorts out this confusing, complex world by keeping you one step ahead of the game. Let's continue our discussion. Here's Linda C. Thompson.
Welcome back to The Next Best Thing. I'm your show host, Linda C. Thompson, and we're visiting with Dr. Mike Beitler, who is a leading consultant in business and author and speaker, and now candidate for senator from North Carolina in the Libertarian Party. Right before break, we said we were going to talk, because we've been talking fiscally and the things that need to change and abolish and where it came from. And then we said we'd talk about how we sort of rein in the welfare system, both corporate and individual. It would be lovely if by the stroke of a pen we could abolish that. Probably not that easy a path. So, Mike, share your thoughts on what, you know, at the risk of using a business word, what the end game would be, and then your thoughts on how we would get there.
Well, you are right, Linda. It will take more than the stroke of a pen, because people need to think differently about it. What I think about, and I've shared this in some of my speeches, about 200 years ago, some of your listeners may be familiar with this, about 200 years ago, a man named Alexis de Tocqueville came over here from France and looked at America, and he was fascinated by Americans, because he said, gee, Americans are very different from the French. When the Americans see a problem, they voluntarily get together and say, how can we solve this problem? How can we raise the money? What can we do to make this problem better? When he criticized his own Frenchmen back in France for always being dependent on the government and always waiting for the government to do something about the problem. Mm. Well, I think that was a very encouraging compliment from de Tocqueville. But then I have to say, Linda, if de Tocqueville came back now, I'm afraid he'd look at Americans and say, well, gee, they seem pretty French now. Because
right.
they're doing the same thing that the French were doing, you know, just sitting back waiting for the government to fix the problem. So part of the issue, I think, for me, Linda, is we need to educate Americans or re-educate them that the government is not the answer to all these problems. They're just going to keep running up more and more debt and not doing it very effectively. You've got to get people who are passionate about these issues using private resources to solve some of these problems.
It is a kind of expertise thing. You know, I mean, we deal a lot with health care, which we're going to be dealing with at the beginning of the year. As soon as the national dialogue becomes health care reform, you've alienated all the health care community, and they're the ones closest to the issue. I mean, they know what's wrong. They know what needs to be changed. They know what's good about it. So you have to leverage the expertise of those who truly know. And politicians know politics.
Yeah, and they're usually a bunch of lawyers who, you know, I have good friends who are lawyers, but they don't really know.
I do too. My oldest son is a lawyer, and he's brilliant, but, you know, the standard background for politicians is law school.
Yes, and as you were indicating, Linda, we need the people who should be talking about the financial crisis are the people with financial expertise, and the healthcare experts are the people working in healthcare. On my radio show, I had a lady on named Dr. Mary Ruart, who ran for almost won the nomination to become the Libertarian candidate for president last time. I dearly wish she would have won. And Mary spent 19 years in the pharmaceutical industry. And her insights into pharma and the big problems there are amazing. But you don't hear the politicians going to somebody like her to get her insights, which we desperately need.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, if we were able to pull back from sort of the government as the welfare institution, how would that change charitable institutions? I mean, we spoke on break. I mean, heaven knows I'm guilty as charged, and have been to many galas and love to do charity events because it's a wonderful giving. And yet, we do know that sometimes it's the charitable event and the picture in the paper for the leaders of that is the driving force. So, what would change there, in your view?
Well, probably the first thing to do, Linda, and I would think about this as a transitional type phase, but for people giving money to charity, they should be able to give it to charity instead of to the government. And the way you would do that quite easily would be, you know, don't make it an itemized deduction on your tax return, but give people a tax credit for giving money to charities. And as you well know, the charitable organizations are much closer to the problem, and they're much more effective at spending the money than government officials all the way in Washington would be able to do it.
I think that would be a move toward, you know, and then I think the charitable institutions themselves, with their expertise, are then going to find themselves in an extremely different role than they are now. I mean, they would in many ways be front and center in both the human welfare stage and the political stage, in a way.
Well, I think for me, the issue would be the problems that we have, the single mothers and people needing assistance for buying groceries and all the other social issues. I would much rather have a passionate volunteer working with a charitable organization to provide those needs than a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. deciding who's going to get money and who's not.
Oh, gee, passionate volunteer who's doing this for nothing because they just think it's the right thing to do, or Washington bureaucrat, very clear delineation.
Yeah, it's pretty clear.
This is probably, what I just said is probably one of those reasons that the disclaimer before the show comes on that says the views expressed are the show host and not the network, I probably just hit that.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit, you know, in pursuing your politics, because we're going to be, oh my goodness, right into our last segment. The time just flies. But want to talk a little bit about how your politics are different from the current sitting senators, Kay Hagan and Richard Burr from North Carolina.
Well, now that's a great question too. I don't know if your listeners are very familiar with North Carolina, but actually I'll be running against Richard Burr, who was a Republican, and Kay Hagan is our Democrat senator.
Democrat, right.
But in my mind, and I think in the minds of most North Carolinians, they don't really see a difference. They just see the same big government kind of answers coming from both of them. So I think Richard Burr's going to have a real struggle in this next election. He does have a lot of PAC money because he's the incumbent. So I think he's going to have a hard time because his favorability ratings are very low. And then any Democrat who runs against him right now, it's going to be very easy, I think, to link them to the big government spending of Obama. So it's going to be an interesting campaign because there are a lot of very upset voters in North Carolina.
And I think across the country, you know, I mean, I know you're
that's true.
Right down there in the trenches with North Carolinians, but across the country, there are a lot of upset Main Street folks.
Pursuing this just a little bit further
in terms of, you know, political differences, are we still at the point of our two-party system is the system of Twiddledum and Twiddledee?
Well, to be honest with you, I really don't see a difference between the two. Maybe in the rhetoric, that's true, and maybe they get their political action committee money from different groups. But ultimately, if you look at what they do in practice, which is, I think, what counts, is I don't really see the difference. I don't see where Obama has changed. What has he changed since Bush? I mean, he might be spending more money, but it's still the idea that big government can fix everything.
Mm-hmm. And so the you know, like this end game word keeps coming to mind. The end game would be smaller government, and then the old adage, the devil is in the details, the transition plan to get to that, build coalitions, honest dialogue, oversight, transparency.
Absolutely.
And one step at a time,
well,
in many ways.
I think so, and I think it's a matter of educating Americans, or like I said before, maybe re-educating them on the fact that they have to be self-responsible, and they have to be willing to help with some of the problems, be willing to volunteer.
I do think that's true. I think we all have to go back to school on the American political scene. And with that note, we're going to pause for just a moment and take a break. And we come back, hear your thoughts on sort of which we're moving into, the state of American politics, and then we'll talk a little bit maybe about Christmas and what inspires you and holiday wishes. We'll be right back with more Next Best Thing and Dr. Mike Beitler.
Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
TriEye is passionate about our credibility and the reputation of our clients. We build long-term value-added relationships, optimize social capital and bottom-line results. TriEye features the three I's.
Insight.
Identifying client vision, strategy, and goals. Designing perfect programs and invigorating individuals, teams, organizations.
Inspiration.
Enlivening vision, strategy, and goals in the heart, mind, spirit of all in the organization.
Implementation.
Pragmatic results, outcomes, and plans for follow-through. For follow-up and an assessment of our success, visit TRIIST.com today.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Acclaimed author, playwright, poet, singer, actor, and beauty, Linda C. Thompson is the double, triple threat. You can anticipate a stunning performance in her next three books already in the works.
Psst, her personal next best thing?
She's in training to be a horse whisperer. For more information about Linda C. Thompson and to view her blogs, check out her podcasts, and connect with her community, visit www.lindasworlds.com. Again, that's lindasworlds.com.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yay!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Enjoying The Next Best Thing with host Linda C. Thompson, a show that sorts out this confusing, complex world by keeping you one step ahead of the game. Let's continue our discussion. Here's Linda C. Thompson.
Welcome back to The Next Best Thing. I'm your show host, Linda C. Thompson, and we are visiting tonight with Dr. Mike Beitler, who is senatorial candidate on the Libertarian ticket for in North Carolina. We were talking just before break about sort of the state of the union, if you will, or the state of American politics, and over break, the chat that we were able to have that you didn't hear and I'd love for you to hear now is, if I may sum it up, Mike, give it a pithy sort of launch for your thoughts, in many ways, the contract, if you will, between politics and, you know, the American people has to change. We were talking about how often we get to chasing our lives and our career and, you know, clients and raising children, et cetera. And then, okay, we check in on elections and we bone up on the issues and we cast a vote, but we don't have a constant involvement and oversight and dialogue the way that, given the situation at the moment and for sometime in the future, I hope a short time, needs to really change. So your thoughts there?
Well, you're right, Linda. And as I was saying during the break, I will confess, up until just a few years ago, I was so busy with my banking career and raising my own children and, you know, just busy with life, I assumed that the politicians were doing the best job. And but then all of a sudden you look up and we're $12 trillion in debt. And I think then you have to say, well, you know, maybe the average person like me needs to get involved and have a voice and express concerns. And as we talked about over the break, I'd like to see more Americans sitting down talking about these issues, you know, rather than football or Tiger Woods or something like that.
How do we do that? How do we get that sort of, you know, coffee clutches, so to speak, little, you know, coffee groups together, whether it's coffee or just my personal favorite bottled water, and begin those dialogues that will lead to change? I mean, one thing Americans are known for is taking action. So if we get the dialogue going, stuff will happen.
I think that's a good point, and maybe we should, you know, start a tradition here of hosting these kind of things in our home. You know, have people over for a coffee or a bottled water, or, yeah, bottled water is actually healthier, I guess. but having these discussions in our home. You know, turn off the TV and maybe have a book that somebody has read and discuss the book and the issues at hand. I personally would find that to be really refreshing.
I think that would be wonderful, and I hope everyone listening now and goes back and listens to this in the archives and listens to the discs I'm going to send the entire world after this show will take that to heart and at least try it. I'll give you a real-life story from my background about how that made significant change. My mother grew up in Mississippi, so of course she grew up in the days of racism. She grew up poor. They were
sharecroppers pick cotton, etc. Then on the wrong side of the tracks in Beaumont, Texas, she noticed when the church that I was baptized in and married in and became an integrated church, she noticed that, well, people of color went to one service at one time and, you know, the people of the Caucasian persuasion went to another. So she talked to the minister and said, we should just have one service. And so if people want to come to this church, they're going to have to, you know, sit elbow to elbow. And then what she did in her own community there, which was now an integrated community, and a house that she and my dad had built together when they first married, she began having coffees. And she would invite neighbors. And, of course, the people that she'd known for 40 years would come because she was who she was. And her new neighbors would come because they were so thrilled that they were being welcomed. And they would have coffees and talk and get to know each other as people. And pretty soon, this led to an NPR radio show about the integration of this church. It does work. I know that from my personal experience.
Well, that's inspiring. That means the rest of us can do that, too.
If we all just made the commitment to have one gathering, whether it's bottled water or coffee or whatever it is.
Right.
And
right.
To chat. Nobody's right. Nobody's wrong. But let's dialogue. I bet every community, every neighborhood, every street would come up with an action that they took on.
I think so.
I mean, that's just my thought. What do you think?
Great vision. I think it's a great vision. I think one of my concerns now is when I come home after dark, you ride by and you see all these blue flickering lights from everybody's house. Everybody's watching television by themselves. And, you know, instead of doing the old, you know, sit on the front porch and talk to your neighbors when they come by sort of thing. And I think that would be a great vision, you know, for people to sit down and talk about some of these issues.
And all it takes is a simple invitation.
That's right.
Invite your friends.
Right.
And invite one or two people you don't know.
Right, right. That's a beautiful
vision.
And
that would be one very concrete step that people could take to move us in this direction, regardless of your politics, but to move us in this direction of a much more involved American public. Because that's what it's going to really take.
I think that's so true. And I think what your listeners would find is what I've found, you know, since I've been campaigning, I don't really have a lot of people who are upset with my politics. In fact, they'll come up and say, you know, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican, but I'm surprised at how much we have in common. We're concerned about the same problems.
It absolutely is. I mean, as I became more familiar in preparation for this particular show with the Libertarian platform, I went, oh, well, that's, it's like, oh, well, that's kind of like, as Thomas Jefferson said, common sense is genius in its working clothes, which just kind of reminds me of the Libertarian platform.
That works for me. I think that sums it up pretty nicely.
So, Mike, I have a question for you. I mean, the tagline for the next best thing is inspiration in motion. We are here the 23rd. Tomorrow's Christmas Eve, and whatever holidays you celebrate around this season, it's still a holiday season. What inspires you?
What inspires me, Linda, is I'm actually positive about the situation because I really believe, you know, we live in a country with the right to vote. And if we would stop wasting our votes on the same old stuff, you know, there are third-party candidates. You know, the Libertarians are on the ballot in North Carolina. That wasn't easy to do, by the way, but we are on the ballot. And there are alternatives. And if we're ready to take some initiative, like we've talked about throughout the show, we can make a difference.
I think that's, you know, it, simple steps leading to great results, that it really does work. It absolutely does. Mike, thank you so much for spending a bit of your holiday time. We're going to have you back, follow your campaign, et cetera. And we next week we want to, believe it or not, we'll have Dan Kroll, who is a soap opera icon. And I will leave it to our listenership to my devious juxtaposition of politics and soap opera and back-to-back shows. But we certainly want to thank Mike. Thank you so much. And best to you and yours during this holiday season. It's been delightful chatting with you.
Oh, thanks,
so until next week, this is Linda C. Thompson and The Next Best Thing.
Thanks again for joining us for The Next Best Thing. Linda C. Thompson will be back for another exciting edition next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Until then, have the best week.